This is the Rocky Mountain Review. I'm Ren Wadsworth.
And I'm Maximos Hunter. This is going to be a very special episode of the Rocky Mountain Review today. We are dedicating our whole hour to discussing last week's blackface incident.
So first we'll be joined in the studio by the news director at the Collegian and CTV, Raven Culler and Edgar Cedillo, to discuss the timeline of the incident and the impact it has had on students around CSU's campus.
We will also be joined by student guests as well as some experts and members of student leadership who will all be in studio discussing this with us. In the meantime, though, we have our own local Raven. You want to say hi?
Hello.
We also have Edgar.
Hello. Sorry, I'm very sick, so I don't sound as good as I normally do.
That's yeah. All right.
None of us are doing super physically well right now. Yeah.
All right, so we just have a couple of questions. So Raven's going to help us cover, Raven's been helping us cover this story, and she's going to tell us a timeline on the events of the blackface incident. So first off, Raven, what happened around the time that the photo was taken?
So according to a couple of people we've interviewed, including the female in the photo, the image was taken Sunday night. The students were put on a black face mask that they had gotten on the plaza that week. The image has the one female and three males. They said that they decided to take a picture and that one of them made a comment about the Black Panther movie. And then two of the students did the symbol from Black Panther where they crossed their arms over their chest. And the image was taken and posted to the female's Snapchat. Following that, another student approached the female about the image. According to the student, she tried to explain to the girl in the photo why it was offensive, and she was not receptive. So the student who was trying to speak to the girl in the photo took a screenshot of it and put it on her own Snapchat. The female in the photo then blocked that student. So she put it on Instagram as well. After that, it picked up a lot of steam on social media. And by, I believe, Tuesday, the university released an email addressing the incident and basically saying that they were not going to take any punitive actions against the students in the photo under consideration of their First Amendment rights. There was quite a bit of backlash to this email from the university. Students did a fairly large amount of chalk protest on the plaza. And as of Thursday, I believe of last week, Joyce McConnell sent another email listing actions that she was going to lead as the president of the university to try to prevent incidences like this in the future. Most of them were funding projects or leading discussions with students and faculty members. So following that, this week, ASCSU Senate had about 700 to 750 students at their session last night. It had to be moved from the ASCSU Senate chambers up to the North Ballroom, and that had to be opened up to two ballrooms because the amount of people attending was too large for the fire marshal's regulations. The Senate session lasted from 6:30 in the afternoon to about 1 a.m. in the morning. There was about 3 hours of galley comments. Usually that only lasts about a half an hour. And the galley comments was extended or were extended twice by senators who moved to have them extended. And for those 3 hours, mostly students of color, but some other students stood up to talk about their experiences with racism on campus, how the actions of the university hadn't been helping them feel safe, hadn't been addressing the issues on campus because incidences like these have been happening quite frequently over the last 5 years. And afterwards, the Senate took about a 10-minute recess and came back to vote on two resolutions. The first was basically a formal condemnation of the image by ASCSU. That passed with only one person opposing, and nobody abstained from that vote. Following that, they also passed a resolution which basically asked the university to take accountability for the image, to take action to make an image like this, images with blackface, or there have been images in the past with symbols like the swastika, nooses, to deem these hate speech on campus and take action, and also ask the university to, as the authors of the bill put it, to call it as it is and formally say that it is blackface and it is hate speech. So both of those passed with 30 or more votes in support. And then today, Joyce McConnell's first fall address, there was a silent protest. I don't have all the information on that protest yet. We had a number of reporters from both the Collegian and CTV there with the protesters and there at the event. So there will be full coverage of both her address and the protest coming out tonight in the Collegian.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Raven. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing that with us. We're actually going to take a break, but stay tuned because afterwards, Edgar Cedillo is going to give us a little information about some impacts this has had on students on CSU's campus. So stay tuned for that.
Before we take a break, real quick, we'd like to pose a question to our listeners. Listeners, because it's been such a whirlwind of a couple of weeks, we'd like to know if there's anything, any part of this incident that people would like to know more about. If you have questions about the timeline of this incident, you can text us at 970-491-5278. That's 970-491-5278. We will also be asking this question on Facebook at KCSUFM and Twitter at KCSUFM. And we do have a Facebook live stream going, so if you want to comment your questions to that, we will take questions from all of those outlets.
Yeah. Thank you again for joining us, Raven. All right. Stay tuned for Edgar Cedillo. Rocky Mountain Review. I'm your host, Ren Wadsworth.
And I'm Maximus Hunter.
And we're joined in studio today by CTV's news director, Edgar Cedillo.
Hi, everyone.
And Edgar's here today because he's going to explain to us the impact this picture has had on students across CSU's campus. So I suppose just to kick it off, what students were you able to interview?
A lot of the students I've been interviewing are students of color just because they are the ones that have been affected the most by this interview, by the interview and the photo as well. And just overall, I've been trying to reach out to all CSU students and stuff like that too. So it's been a lot of emotion based off from these interviews that I've gotten.
So what did students have to say about the impact this picture had on them to you, Edgar?
I think the resounding thing that students have said is that they've all said they're shocked but not surprised, because this isn't the first time this has happened. This is, I think, the fourth in the last 4 years that this has happened. A lot of the, especially the seniors that I spoke to, say that this has happened every year. So a lot of them say they're not surprised this keeps happening on campus, because it's essentially this culture that's embedded to CSU. And at the same time, they express a lot of disappointment, because obviously a lot of them and a lot of students aren't happy with how the university and administration and Joyce McConnell has responded to these incidences, and just the way that the tactics that the university is using, because obviously it is very public relation-y,
right?
And they're trying to save face and et cetera. So I think a lot of them are disappointed because of the lack of action that the school has taken, on these students, but at the same time, you know, at the end of the interviews that I got to, I asked them like how they felt going forward. And I think a lot of them still have hope that something will change. I think a lot of them were, especially today, after today, seeing that protest at the fall address. I think a lot of them think that change has begun because of this incident. So I think, you know, I think that there is still hope that, you know, the administration will hopefully do something, that the administration will listen to the students. So I think overall, there's a lot of emotions that students feel. You know, it's been a lot of, obviously, anger directed at the student who posted this and at student media, not going to lie. Like,
right.
We at student media have taken a lot of the heat. And it's understandable that we are getting heat taken for it. So, but apart from the anger, I think a lot of it is disappointment and fear. Not only because it's just like students, you know, one of the questions that I asked students when I was interviewing with them was, at any point, did they ever consider leaving CSU? And a lot of them said it crossed their mind, but at the same time, by them leaving CSU would only be giving power to those.
Wow, that's a powerful point, a powerful perspective.
Yeah,
thank you very much, Edgar. We really appreciate you coming in and sharing your experience with us today. We are going to take another quick break, but when we get back, we are going to have some more student perspectives on the air, including the student who originally shared the Snapchat. Not the one who posted it, but the one who originally shared it for people to see. So we'll be right back with that. But in the meantime, we do have a question for our listeners. Did this post, did this incident impact you personally? And if it did impact you personally, we would love to hear your stories. You can text them to us at 970-491-5278. That's 970-491-KCSU. Or you can send them to our Facebook. We have a Twitter question going, and we also have a Facebook live stream that you can comment your responses on. We will be right back.
Welcome back to the Rocky Mountain Review. I'm your host, Ren Wadsworth.
And I'm Maximus Hunter, and we are joined in studio by some very special guests. We have three student guests. Would you guys mind introducing yourselves?
Hi, my name is Deborah Oduro.
Hi, my name is Joshua Oldehoff.
Hi, my name is Erica LaFaire.
Thank you so much for joining us today. So we did actually, we got a question over the break from a gentleman named Darren. And Darren asks a question that I think we should have a pretty good time answering in this next segment. The question he asked is, why should we care? And I think we have a lot of people who have a lot of good answers to that here with us. So first, could each of you guys describe your experience or involvement with the blackface incident on campus?
Yeah, so initially what happened was I was doing homework with Josh, and I was on Snapchat, and I came across Leanna's post. So I slid up, talked to her, tried to explain to her why it was wrong to post something like that. She didn't understand, and she told me not to take it so hard because it wasn't a dig. And from that point on, I screenshotted it, and I posted it on my Snapchat. And she blocked me on Snapchat, so I later on posted it on my Instagram. She blocked me on there, and then the issue escalated from there.
Thank you so much. Moving down the line, Joshua, what about you?
So my experience was basically what she said. I was just doing homework with her, and we were just basically going over some studying like processes. And she posted about it, and as soon as I saw it, I posted about it immediately as well. And I don't know, it just kind of like immediately right after she posted, I posted about it. I actually messaged her, or I almost messaged her. Yeah, we discussed it in our room. And my friends actually, I posted about it on my story. My friends talked about it with me, and they started posting about it as well. And it just, yeah.
Gotcha. Thanks for sharing, Joshua. And Erica, what about you?
So I'm not as directly involved as these two. My role is more so the fact that I'm a second-year graduate in the Ethnic Studies department here, or graduate student, rather. And so my involvement, not just as a student, but I've been an activist here on campus for the last 3 years. Last year, I was a main organizing member in Students Against White Supremacy, in which we were trying to organize the campus in response to the acts of white supremacy that had happened prior to this incident. And so when I saw that this happened, I also started sharing on social media and organizing the students that I knew in terms of anticipating a response.
Gotcha. Thank you very much for sharing.
Awesome. And then just going down the line a little bit again, if you all would be willing to describe your background and how this experience kind of influenced your perspective, how it impacted you personally. So if we'll just start on the right side with Josh.
So my life has been, I guess, pretty diverse. I've gone to mostly diverse schools and I've been pretty big for my, I've been into like social justice in my schools as well. And I just felt like when this happened, I guess I just had almost like obligated to get into it. Throughout high school, I went through like Black Student Alliance, and I went through different clubs for, I guess, quote unquote minorities, I guess, just to get more involved. And so when this happened, I just guess I needed to get involved as well.
Right.
For me, I'm from Ghana, a place in West Africa. And as a person of color, like a woman of color, I've always experienced like discrimination and racism. So obviously this like got my attention, and I really felt drawn to speak out about these issues because I always do.
Right.
I am from a white working class background in a steel borough from Pittsburgh. And so race relations has always been pretty central to my life in terms of racism back on the East Coast looks a little bit different. It's a little bit more in your face. And so I've always been aware of things such as blackface. And then also coming to CSU and being in ethnic studies has offered me a lot of opportunities to deconstruct my own whiteness and the ways in which I participate in white supremacy. And so when this happened, it's very deeply impactful because it's like seeing, you know, my fellow white women still perpetuating the same racism that we have been for centuries. And so it's really important as a white identified woman to speak out against it.
Right.
Right on. Thank you for sharing that. Erica, you, having been at this campus for a bit longer, you'll definitely have some answers to this. But is this the only racial insensitivity you've noticed at CSU? And if it's not, what else have you noticed?
Sure. And so before I answer that question, I think it's also really important to recognize that when we talk about these things, we're not actually talking about insensitivities. We're talking about actual microaggressions. So blackface, racial slurs, swastikas, these are all very harmful things, right? Like an insensitivity in a sense is like maybe hurt feelings, but this is a little bit like this is a lot deeper, actually. So in terms of being on campus for a lot longer, I've been present for more, probably at least 3 instances of swastikas being put on walls. I was here for the noose at Newsom incident and also the border wall that was erected by students in the plaza. That was probably actually the first thing that I noticed. And that isn't to say, right, like other things were happening, but the thing that really caught my attention, because the thing with the border wall was that it was meant to really provoke students into quote-unquote dialogue. And really what ended up happening is the students who put up the wall were telling undocumented students that they needed to leave and that they didn't come back or they didn't come here the right way. And the students who knew Spanish were actually telling the undocumented students in Spanish that they were dirty. And I thought that was pretty significant because they thought somehow that because they were speaking Spanish, they could get away with that, but they couldn't. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything to add?
Just like being here on this campus, I noticed there's like extreme disconnect, like when I see like the white people here, and it almost makes me uncomfortable just because I don't see anyone on this campus. I mean, I do know some people who, like, say the N-word sometimes, but, like, yeah, that's, like, pretty much all I've experienced. And then this blackface issue.
I haven't really experienced anything besides this huge outcome. I do agree with, the whole disconnect thing. Like, in class, I've seen people disconnect from, like, there's a girl I know who's in my psychology, philosophy class who had joined our group, I guess, out of a whole table of my kids. And I just joined the group as well from a whole different table. And we were talking for, like, a good, like, 20 minutes. And as soon as she came over, the whole table would have shut down. None of us have talked since. We barely talk at all. All we do is just do work, and that's it. There's no actual connection. And, like, the topic of disconnection is, like, really big to me. So, yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. And make sure you stay tuned, because after this, we're going to be talking to these same students about how we can move forward from this incident.
Yep. And if you listeners have any questions for these students, you can please send us a text at 970-491-5278. That's 970-491-KCSU. Or we have that Facebook live stream going. You can comment on there. We have a Facebook status for these questions as well as Instagram posts. So if you respond, we'll try to get back to you as best we can. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Rocky Mountain Review. I'm your host, Ren Wadsworth.
And I'm Maximus Hunter, and we are joined in studio by three lovely student guests. Would you mind introducing yourselves?
Hi, I'm Erica LaFaire.
Hi, I'm Deborah Durham.
Hi, I'm Josh. Joshua Olhoff, yeah.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come in and talk with us today.
So we're joined in studio by Deborah Duro, Josh Aldehoff, and these are two students who were actually involved in posting Leanna Kaplan's picture onto Instagram. And we're also joined by Erica LaFaire. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Awesome. A second-year graduate student at Colorado State University, and she is studying ethnic studies. So we've actually got a couple of texts that came in.
Yeah.
So this one, to censor it a little bit, says, "Wow, you millennials seem like a bunch of redacted. What would you care more about? Why would you care more about hate speech than free speech? You believe in your free speech. How is that freedom only for those that hold the same point of view?" So if you guys kind of want to take on that question.
Everybody looks at me. So I think it's really interesting. Right. So I guess I should specify, in my studies in ethnic studies, I look a lot at whiteness. In particular, the ways that it moves in our contemporary society, and how currently, specifically, how it is implicated in the way our nation is built. In terms of First Amendment rights, I think that a lot of people have a really simplistic understanding as to what freedom of speech entails, right? And actually, when we talk about it, we're talking really a lot more about, like, what the government is entitled in terms to free speech. And also this idea that it's only for, like, one point of view is really interesting, because we actually have a lot of political prisoners that don't share, like, the same view. And so in terms of this question, right, of, like, why would you care more about hate speech versus free speech, I think it's really interesting that at a baseline level, when we think about this, right, like, why wouldn't we care about other people when we are speaking, right? Just like the simple act of treat people the way that you would hope to be treated. Just because you should say something, or just because you want to say something, doesn't mean that you actually should say it, right? And the fact that hate speech is tied to hate crimes and actions. And so when we look at acts of racial slurs and blackface, where we actually situate them in terms of acceptable and non-acceptable white supremacist behavior, it's actually still one of the last forms of white supremacy that's considered unacceptable. And so when we make excuses for it, we normalize it. And this actually opens up the gateway for levels of violence in terms of, like, actual, like, physical escalation, which will also then be normalized.
Wow, that was very well thought out and thought-provoking. Thank you very much, Erica.
Yeah, Deborah and Josh, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, just to piggyback off of what she said, I think it's just the golden rule, just to go back to that, treat others the way that you want to be treated. So just to be mindful of, like, how you're addressing others, and just to have, like, common courtesy. I feel like that should just be common sense.
Yeah. everyone should think about how what they say before they say it, and whether or not it affects someone else. And free speech should be free speech, but also be not just towards someone, or like just making someone, I guess, or like a majority of people just like feel lesser than or something like that. They just, I don't know, they should be able to like talk to them like free speech, not
right.
Gotcha.
So going forward from this incident, what do you personally think, what actions can we take as a campus, as a student body, to respond to an incident like this better in the future?
I think first we should so when the whole incident happened, Joyce McConnell basically sent out an email saying that like she couldn't do anything because they were protected under the First Amendment, and like it wasn't affiliated with the school or anything, even though they go here. And I think since CSU has a history of like these incidents, we should probably start talking about them more instead of like shutting people down and calling others insensitive for wanting to talk about issues that affect people who are marginalized in society. So I think maybe I guess what I'm trying to say is like we should just have a place where people can have conversation and just really acknowledge the issue, whether that be like in classes or like something, you know, like that.
Right.
I think that what we should do is, yeah, like it'd be a place where we can all talk. I really think India is like a, I guess with that vote, I like the safe space, I guess, where we can all talk as like a whole group on discussions. Some people have like some people think that this whole problem was just not a huge thing. It was just like some blowover thing, and some people think this is actually really huge. And I think people, there should be a place where we can actually like talk about that, like without any like fights or like or outbursts. We should just be able to like talk normally to each other.
I'd love to focus on that point actually, because we're running out of time, but that is something I think we should definitely talk about, well, since we're all students here. What kind of resources would you like to see available to students of color and people affected by these? And what kind of resources do you think should be available at CSU for students to use to discuss issues like, saying racially hurtful things,
right,
or incidents like these?
So I just wanted to put this in here, right, because this connects to this question in terms of resources. So one, I'm not a student of color, and I don't want to speak for what students of color need, because I don't know that. So the other thing about this too is like, first, actually, I think we need to start with changing the way that we talk about these things, even before we can get to these conversations. The fact that we can't even like label these things as white supremacist actions, right? We're still using the words of bias motivated, etc. Like today in Joyce McConnell's speech, couldn't even say that this was white supremacist, right? We're still really leaning on racism and this idea of racism that everybody can actually enact racism, which is wildly inaccurate, right? And then the other thing too, in terms of changing these conversations, is that we also have to talk about like in terms of freedom of speech and what we're allowed to say is we're really limited because of source funding. And so until CSU actually looks at the fact that it's getting money from donors that are like supportive of conservative issues that fund the way that limits our conversations, any conversations that we have around these issues, even as students, is going to be severely limited, because we're going to be told that we have to stay within these safe parameters that don't threaten funding. And so if we actually want to have change, we need to request that the base funding changes so that we can get to the critical axis of this, which is a culture of white supremacy.
Gotcha. Wow. Thank you, Erica. Deborah, do you have anything you'd like to add about resources you'd like to see on campus?
Well, I don't have anything to add about like getting resources, but I do know that the back office is a really good place to go if you just need someone to talk to, because they were actually really helpful when it came to this situation. I went down to the office and spoke with Emerald. She's like one of the coordinators for it, and she was just very helpful and kind of just like helped me to see what I could do and like where my place was on this campus, because I felt very uncomfortable after this incident. So yeah, I think the back office is a great resource, and we should continue to have that.
I'm glad to hear that you found that helpful, and I hope other students will too. That's awesome. We are going to go on a quick break before we come back, where we have two experts, one of whom is a member of student government here and one of whom works for Project Voice down in Denver.
But before we do, I want to thank all three of you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate having you here and hearing some other opinions.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. Your opinions are very respected and very wanted here. So thank you guys for taking the time to come out of your busy days and spend it here and explain to our listeners a little bit more about this situation from different viewpoints.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
No problem. We're going to take this break, but we do have another question during the break. What questions do people have about getting involved is our next question. And if you do have questions about getting involved, you can shoot us a text at 970-491-5278. That is 970-491-5278. Or you can comment on our Facebook live stream, leave a comment on our Facebook posts or our Twitter posts at KCSU-FM. We will be back.
Welcome back to the Rocky Mountain Review. I'm your host, Ren Wadsworth.
And I'm Maximus Hunter. We just heard some voices of CSU students giving us their opinion. And now we turn to an outside opinion. Brianna Hill, our guest today, is a graduate of the Ethnic Studies program at CU Boulder. And Brianna has since gone on to become a program assistant for Project Voice, which is an organization based out of Denver, which works with youths from underprivileged or underrepresented communities to develop leadership skills and fight oppression. So we sat down with Bree to ask them their opinion on the events at CSU from an outside perspective. Without any further ado, here's Project Voices, Brianna Hill. All right, Bree, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, of course. Hello again, Max.
Just to get this started, I'd love to know, what's your background? What do you do?
So my name is Brianna Hill. My pronouns are they and theirs. I identify as a Black queer non-binary person of good faith, I think. I'm a recent college grad from the University of Colorado Boulder with a major in ethnic studies. And now I'm currently working for a nonprofit down in Denver called Project Voice that trains, employs, and organizes youth of color to tackle on issues in their community.
That's awesome.
Would you be willing to describe what you think institutional racism is?
Yeah, of course. So for me, I feel as if institutional racism is a form of racism that is expressed in the practice of social and political institutions. So through healthcare, education, police force, the criminal justice system, or housing, that racism that stops people of color in an institutional setting is institutional racism to me. It creates a caste system based off of ideology and like another person's individual thoughts.
Could you go a little deeper into how that institutional structure affects individuals?
Yeah, of course. So say if say if I got arrested with my other friend who presents as white, and we both have the same thing that happened. We both got arrested for the same exact thing, and I got a longer sentence than my other friend did. That's institutional racism based off of my own race. Because we did the same thing, and yet I don't have the same amount of sentencing as the person I got arrested with. Or if you went to, like, the hospital and, like, you didn't get enough service because of your race and yet someone else did.
So going a little more in depth into the situation at CSU and the blackface incident, what do you think the students in the picture can do to address the hurt that they caused?
Not make it about themselves. I recently read the statement, I forget her name, but the one some identified person in the picture stated was like it was an apology, but like it really was about her, and it didn't help at all in the situation because she wasn't owning up to what she actually did, and now she's like playing like the blame thing where it's like, oh, now people are being mean to me, I'm upset. So it's like, don't make it about yourself, like put action into the things that you've done and like talk to the community that you hurt and see what like resolutions come to.
I like that because that's very similar to a lot of things we've been hearing people say that these students should do. Do you think that recent incident we had here ties into institutional racism?
Absolutely. I feel like students of color get more of a punishment than white students. That's on my own personal experience. like coming out of college, like I've noticed that like I get more kind of the bad rap than like other white students who like do protesting on campus. Like that's my experience. But I feel like institutional racism definitely plays into that, because like clearly CSU isn't doing as much as it should be doing for its students of color, for its Black students. And that's probably because these students were white in the picture.
Right. Yeah.
Would you mind giving us an example of a time you felt like you experienced that in your own experience?
Yeah. So while I was at CU Boulder, I was an activist on campus. And so I did a lot of things on campus, like protesting or demonstrations and stuff like that. And there was this one event where I got my student group and a couple of other student groups to chalk the sidewalks in protest of Donald Trump's presidency. And we chalked like all of campus, like from the football stadium to like our planetarium. Like it's a large campus, and like we chalked everything. And then the morning, like combat, like everything has been washed away. Like all of our stuff was washed away. Like they didn't leave a single trace of all of our chalk drawings. And then 2 weeks from then, the white fraternities and sororities started chalking for their like recruitment process. And they did it, like, there are rules that you have to do for chalking with. Like, you can't chalk, like, 2 feet in front of a building. You can't chalk diagonally, like, stuff right. like that. But their stuff, like, stayed for months.
That's fascinating, because the exact same thing right. happened here, actually, and that kind of made some news, is that we had students chalking in the common areas, and that chalking got erased, while other chalking was not erased, and even though it's against our school's policy to erase student chalking.
Mm-hmm. Especially yep. on our Laurie Student Center Plaza, which has been famously known as a free speech zone.
Oh, yeah. The CU Boulder has the fountains where it's like a free speech zone, but like, what exactly is free speech for who?
What do you think as a campus we could do as an organization to better address incidents like this in the future?
That's a really big question. I feel like for me, like as I was a student, I actually want my university to listen to what I and other students have to say. I saw recently on my friend's Instagram post that like, I think she was a dean or something. She was at the meeting, but she was on her phone. She wasn't clearly engaged. She wasn't like listening. And then she left for part of the meeting, but then came back. I feel like in that situation, like you need to listen to what your students have to say. And if not, then you don't deserve to, like, work at a university. Like, you should put your students first instead of anything else.
Since you have a little bit of outsider insight, do you personally think that CSU is generally more tolerant of racism than other universities?
Maybe. I feel like any, like, predominantly white institution is more tolerant to racism than anything else. That can go for literally every institution. Now that I'm thinking about it, every institution has institutional racism, so they're going to be tolerant of racism.
Right.
I feel like in my case, since I was at CU Boulder, I didn't hear that much from CSU. I heard a lot from CU Boulder, though. So I'm not entirely sure how to answer that because of my perspective, like at CU and like getting it firsthand, like from myself and from other people, where it's like, oh, this racism thing just happened, like 5 times in a week.
Yeah.
So do you think that this might not be a CSU-specific problem, but more a problem that many colleges and universities are facing nowadays?
Absolutely. I feel like I see a lot of news posts where it's like, these students did this, but racism happened on this institution, and then nothing happens after that. Like, there's no headlines after that.
Right.
Like, we just kind of leave our institutions in the dark to just, like, forget about it and sweep it underneath the rug instead of, like, blatantly like bringing it out to the front and like discussing it.
So do you think that that's indicative of a culture more accepting of racism or of a culture that's trying harder to root out racism and it being fought against?
Both. I feel like in some cases, like it has happened on both sides.
Or do you think that it's more just because it's an uncomfortable topic that students don't want to talk about?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like no one wants to talk about racism unless it's actually happening to them. And that's a really sad truth of America, where like the people who are talking about racism is like the people who are being targeted by racism. And I think that's something we need to change, because like racism isn't going to go away unless we have a conversation about it.
Right.
That's the truth. All right, Bree, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking with us today.
Yeah.
Amazing. I love it.
It's been wonderful to have you.
Yeah, thank you so much for your insight and your opinions on this situation.
And that was Brianna Hill from Project Voice. Thank you so much, Bree, for sitting down and chatting with us. We really appreciated the time talking to you. We're about to go on another break, but we do have another question we'd like to pose to our listeners. That question is, what do you think CSU can do to combat future racist incidents? You can text us your answer at 970-491-5278. That's 970-491-KCSU. Or you could comment on our Facebook live video. We have Facebook posts you could comment. That's under KCSU FM. Or you could comment reply to our tweets at KCSU FM. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Rocky Mountain Review. I'm Ren Wadsworth.
I'm Maximus Hunter.
And we're joined in studio by the Collegian's news director, Raven Culler.
Hello, hello.
Hey, Raven. So during the break, we did receive a question from a listener asking us what other incidents have happened on campus besides last week's blackface posting. And Raven, you know a little bit about that. So would you mind giving us some details on some of the history of racist incidents at CSU?
Sure. So I've been doing some fairly extensive research over the last week or so into kind of the incidences that have been happening on campus within the last five-ish years. There was a significant uptick in at least reported incidences or incidences that were reported on after the 2016 election. The fall of 2017 started off with the discovery of a noose in Newsom Hall, or a fake noose made of crepe paper. That was a video of that was taken by the only black resident of that hall and put online. It got over 13,000 views. The university responded with some open forums on race, and obviously Tony Frank sent an email at the time. That incident was followed up by similar incidences that year. So a mannequin was discovered covered in what were being called Nazi symbols in the dumpster near Moby, I believe. There was an image on Snapchat of a freshman in Durward Hall who had a large swastika painted on her arm. It had the red band and the Nazi swastika. That student was identified, and according to the Collegian's coverage at the time, Residence Life took actions after that. Then you have in 2018, one of the big events that happened on campus during 2018 is Charlie Kirk came to speak on campus. There was about 200 people in a protest, counter-protest that involved some white nationalist groups and Antifa. That protest was relatively calm. There are some reports of some pockets of violence, but for the most part, it was fairly calm. There have been things like white supremacist flyers found in Clark, or posted near or in Clark. And then we, of course, have the incident in 2018 in which two Native American students joined their tour of the campus late, and a parent who was also on the tour called the campus police saying that the students seemed suspicious based on how they looked and dressed. So the tricky thing is, we've had recently reports of other incidences that have happened during these time periods. We've been told about them that were just not reported, just weren't communicated to the campus community. But over the last couple of years, there have been a number of incidences largely involving symbols that are discriminatory or derogatory towards different groups. And the term that the university often uses to describe them are either racial or bias motivated incidences. Basically, that means that whatever it is it falls under the purview of threatening or intimidating, trying to intimidate others based on their race, their religion, their gender, So there have been quite a few incidences within the last 5 years that fall under that purview. And all of them have been responded to by the university in fairly similar ways. Most of them get an email from the president. Of course, for all of those incidences, that president was Dr. Tony Frank. And then a lot of them were followed up by some sort of discussion on whatever happened. Some of them were open forums. Some of them were closed door meetings. Some of them were responses in ASCSU. Obviously, up to this point, the response to this incident by the university has been along the similar lines. The last time, though, that a large sit-in at an ASCSU session occurred and kind of produced anything was in 2015. There was some internal stuff happening at ASCSU, and there was a decently large sit-in at one of their sessions that prompted the passage of, after some, you know, hard-fought protest work, prompt the passage of the diversity bill in ASCSU, which is what now allows diversity offices to have senators on the ASCSU Senate. So that is, it mirrors some of what has happened around this incident within the last week.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that timeline, Raven.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming in.
That's going to conclude our show today, but we are really glad that we've had everyone in here talking about this incident happened last week and bringing attention to the fact that this may not be a new occurrence on CSU's campus,
right,
and some things we could do to change and improve, and just lots of powerful things to think about. If you missed part of this episode and want to hear it back, they will all be uploaded to kcsufm.com, as well as last week's episode where we spoke to a Princeton professor about how to help educate white people on race.
Right. We will continue to be updating you on more coverage of the situation as it progresses. Raven, if you want to talk about a little bit about what the Collegian's going to be covering.
Yeah, of course. So you can find all of our past coverage of the gallery session last night and the interview on our website. And then today we'll have an article about the passage of the two resolutions that went out in the ASCSU Senate coming out tonight, as well as one article about McConnell's speech today and another about the protests that happened at it. I also know that CTV will be posting the full raw footage of the gallery session, and I believe the session during which the resolutions were passed last night. That may take them a couple of days just because the gallery session itself was 3 hours,
right,
and that's a lot of footage to deal with. But I know that all of that is going to be going up in its entirety. I believe CTV also has some raw footage of interviews with students also going up very soon.
Right. I think CTV is continuing their story on the impact this has had on students tonight. And also next Tuesday, we're going to be interviewing Haneen Badri on our show. So stay tuned for that, because this will just be a continuation of our story. Go ahead, Max.
Thanks. We're going to ask our listeners one final question. And since the show is about over, we won't have a chance to answer this on the air, but we'd still love to hear your input. And that question, and I think that's the big question that we can take away from all of this, is what can CSU do to be better next time, or to prevent there from being a next time?
Right.
We'd really love to hear your thoughts on that. And I know we're going to be thinking about that as well. But it is the end of our show.
And as per tradition, we can't end our show without giving a couple thanks to everybody who was on our show and everybody who helped our show be what it is.
Well, we've got to thank Damien Castile, first of all, because he is the one who wrote the song is going to be playing in 3, 2, 1. Thank you, Damien.
There it goes.
But we have a lot of thanks to get through today, because we've had a lot of very special guests. So I want to just trade them off. First of all, let's thank Erica LaFaire. Erica LaFaire, thank you so much for coming on. We know you have a busy schedule. We really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
And then next, we want to thank Bree Hill for giving us that wonderful phone interview that we got to do before our show.
Yeah, that was awesome. We'd like to thank Raven Culler, who is currently sitting right in front of us, for not only coming on the show twice to talk about stuff, but also helping us set all this up. You've been, we wouldn't have been able to do this without you. You're a huge asset.
We want to thank Edgar Cedillo for his report on how this has impacted students around CSU's campus.
We'd like to thank Joshua Oldehoff for coming in and chatting.
And then we want to thank Deborah for also coming in and chatting and really telling us what happened during that event.
Yes. Of course, as always, we'd like to thank Hannah Copeland, Julia Badalese, Zay, Pete, everyone in the studio who allows us to do such an awesome show where we talk about important stuff. We couldn't do this without you, naturally.
Yeah, and we have to thank our amazing videographers in the studio, Desiree and Taylor, as well as our awesome social media promotions director.
That would be Asher.
And of course, I have to thank Max.
And I gotta thank you, Ren. Yeah. And thank you, listeners.
We have to thank you.
We'll catch you next time.